This is the Transcend in Life podcast with your host, J.M. Ryerson, taking you from fear to freedom.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of Transcend in Life podcast. I have an amazing guest today that truly, when you meet her, she brightens your day, makes the room just that much bigger, and just she's so much fun to be around. India Kenny Stearns, with over 20 years of entertainment and television experience, is an accomplished television producer and network executive, named one of the top female executives in Hollywood by Essence Magazine. Kenny Stearns has been instrumental in identifying and developing new programming for various networks, including VH1, CBS, NBC, HGTV, BET, and OWN. Most recently as vice president of development and programming for the Oprah Winfrey Network, India was responsible for overseeing day-to-day development of new original programming, including popular docuseries Flex and Shanice, Raising Whitley, and Dion's Family Playbook. She is the founder and CEO of EKS Consulting, CEO of All Things Media. She's got some exciting announcements. India, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing this morning?
Oh my gosh, I am doing well. I am grateful. Listen, I always say any day I'm blessed to see is a good day. So I'm just happy to be here. It's another day to get it right.
I love that. And I tell you what, like I said, when you walk into a room, everybody's day just gets that much better. So my goodness, you have done so much in your time on this earth. Can you just start and describe maybe a 5-minute your story, because, and maybe it's longer, and I'm totally good with that because it is an amazing story, where you came from to where you're at today, and then we will definitely dive into some amazing things that you have forthcoming.
Oh my gosh, that was a loaded question. Well, first off, let me just say thank you so much, JM, for having me. And I thank you for those just encouraging words that you said about me. I never think like that about myself sometimes, you know, like you're just in the moment and you're being, but I so receive that. And I feel the same way about you. So I'm honored to be a part of your podcast today. So thank you for having me. But to jump into that question, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. It's literally like 30 minutes away from Dallas. I'm pretty sure people know about Fort Worth. And I grew up with a single mom. My father passed away when I was really young. But the significance of that was the fact that he would always have me recite commercials. And I always would watch like Shirley Temple movies. And I said, oh, I want to be her. I want to be a Black Shirley Temple, you know? When my father passed away when I was 2, my mom, you know, just she knew that it was something that I really loved to do. I would walk around with my tap shoes on everywhere I went, and my dad would always let me do that. And in his absence, it was a huge void in my life. And my mom was really intuitive, really discerning. She was constantly engaging me, constantly, you know, talking me through things. And it wasn't until I was around 4 years old that I really understood that he was gone. And I went through, I guess what you call post-traumatic stress disorder. That's what you would call it now. But then, you know, they didn't really have that term. And I was very fearful. I didn't want my mom to leave. I was like, oh my gosh, if she leaves, she's not going to come back. Like it was just a moment of paralyzation. And through much prayer and just really walking me through the understanding of death, which is, I know it sounds really crazy at 4, I understood that life is very short. I understood that God has a purpose for all of us. I understood that, you know, we don't know when our last day is going to be. And so it's super important to use everything you have, every gift, every talent, whatever it is, to just use it to the best of your ability for service to other people and giving glory to the Creator who gave it to you. And when she put that in me at 4, she was very clear, like, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be a Black Shirley Temple. She's like, I don't know how to do that, but there is a theater down the way there's celebrities that come through there. There's people. She's like, listen, if you really got something and you can get on a stage, let's see what happens. And that same sort of faith and stepping out has really been the driving force of my entire life. And I got up on that stage, they had open auditions, and I ended up getting hired at 4 years old at this theater. And I ended up doing, I don't know, I was there for 12 years. I did hundreds of plays. Got my equity card at four. And while I was there, sure enough, agent saw me, signed me around 7 years old. I ended up doing commercials and movies and television shows. I was flying out to LA every pilot season. It exploded for me. And it wasn't until I got out of college and I had, you know, sort of decided when I was going on these auditions, like, wow, you know, things have changed since I was a kid. Like, there's not a lot of opportunity for me. It's more about a look more than it is my gifts. I really wanted to understand the business of it all. I said, you know, I really want to affect change. Like, I want to see opportunities for people that look like me, you know, who, you know, there are not a lot of opportunities or not a lot of parts. You know, I want to be a decision maker. I want to be the person to say yay or nay. And I really wanted to understand why it was so limiting. And I wanted to affect change to be service to others. That was sort of how I got into behind the scenes of television. And one thing led to another, and my career just sort of exploded. I interned at a production company, and it was called Emmons Entertainment. They had done a movie called Soul Food, and they were turning the Soul Food movie into a TV series at Showtime. I had seen the movie. I'm just an intern now, right? And I was getting scripts and I was reading them, and because I knew the characters and the arc as a kid actor, it was my job to understand story. It was my job to understand the arcs of the characters. And so I would write notes like, I don't know if she would say that, or maybe better if she moved this here. And I was literally just operating in a gift that I didn't even know I had that had been cultivated since a kid. And the executive said, oh my gosh, these are really good notes. Do you want to be an assistant story editor? And I'm like, does it pay? Yes. And so from that point, I learned what it was like from a production company standpoint, but I really wanted to know what it was like on the network side. So I spent 9 months just sending in resumes, sending in letters to every studio network that I could get my hands on, address that I get my hands on, HR departments, went online, and it was very limited back in those days. I'm not that old, but we're talking 1999, 2000. And you know, it just sort of opened up for me. There was a friend of mine who had gotten a job at Nickelodeon at Viacom, and I saw a job at VH1 at Viacom, and I'm like, oh my God, that's a perfect position. It's in development, you know. And I said, just get me in the room. And so she vouched for me with the HR person. After four interviews, I got the job. And that was my first network executive role. And from there, I produced, I developed, and I just, you know, things just kept going. And here, wow, I am.
It is just incredible. And you've worked on so many large stages, and I love CEO of all things media. That makes sense because I'm looking at it. You've been on in front of the camera. You've been behind. You've been producing. You've done so many amazing things, and obviously you've worked at some incredibly successful networks. It seems like people don't fully understand how much goes into putting that show on stage. It's not simply like, okay, we got a camera, got a director, let's just go. So you've stayed behind the camera more now in your professional life as an adult. What can you offer to people so they really can understand that when you turn on that television, there's a lot that went into it. It wasn't just the actors. It wasn't just a director. There were hundreds of people putting this thing together.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and you know, from the network executive position, it's very interesting because people wonder, oh, you just sit behind a desk and say yes or no, and that's it. No, there's a lot, like you said, that goes into it. From the time that someone has an idea and they come through the door, it's my job to say, okay, does this work for the brand of the network? Just from that point. And then I have to then sell it internally. It's not just, oh, let's go. It's not just my decision. It's the decision of the marketing. Marketing people feel like, can I market this to make this a great show? It's scheduling and acquisitions. They decide, well, do we have enough space for it? Does it have a great lead-in to be successful? Now, this is before the show is even produced, Jam. So then we have all of these meetings around that. Now, if it passes that, then it's my job to then develop it to make it successful. And from the point of the characters to the story, and this is unscripted and scripted, but let's just focus on unscripted for a second. So from the characters to the format, to every beat that goes into the show, to the host, to the look of the show, to the graphics, all of this is done on paper first. Then you got to make it. So then, you know, I'm working directly with the producers. I'm working directly with the executive producers, the casting, the directors, in the execution of it, to make sure that what we talked about in the first 6 to 7 weeks of pre-pro is being carried out, you know, in real time on set. And so there are all these different pieces that come together. And then once it's made, then there's a whole nother set of people that come in and say, all right, what part of the show do we need to pull out for marketing? Was it exactly what we thought? Do we pivot? What's the landscape of the appetite for people? What do we, you know, connect with first from the heart of the show? There's so much that goes into making a show, from graphics to, I mean, you name it. And then you've got social media. So that's a whole nother arm of marketing that we're talking about, and engaging, you know, the people that are a part of the show with their audience. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, but it's fun. It's a lot of work, but it is fun.
It is remarkable. You know, me just as a typical consumer, I turn on the TV and I flip through all these channels of all this hard work that's been put into play. But I want to get back to you. You mentioned growing up, you obviously at 4 years old, you had this very, this moment where you even mentioned paralysis, because you dealt with that so early, and then you were inspired to become, you called it the Black Shirley Temple. And obviously you've worked in some of these spaces with BET and obviously with Oprah. They have done so much in that community. And you mentioned some of the challenges with seeing people like yourself getting those roles. Do you feel like we've come a long way, or is there still a long way to go? Because I see people talk about that, and it obviously was something you addressed as well. How are we doing in that space in your media world? Do you feel like the opportunities have grown? And I guess I'm curious to get it from your take.
You know, it's funny, absolutely different from 99, that's for sure. I mean, you've got Ava DuVernay, you've got Will Packer, you've got Tyler Perry, you've got obviously Oprah, but you know, she sort of breaks every mold. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's definitely gotten better since the time that I started. Now, better from 0 to 5, you know what I mean? Like it's all relative, right? It's all perspective, right? Because, you know, there's so many more talented people of color out there, and the doors just aren't easily as open. And I believe we're at a time now where people are really starting to, you know, be forced, or, you know, being, you know, to be woke, you know, to sort of wake up and say, oh, I have been putting my face in the sand. Like I think that I thought it was good because I saw a handful of people do better. And since those people are constantly in my face, in my newsfeed, or, you know, in my blog, or looking at their blogs, or in my social media, or on TV, like, I'm like, oh, it is getting better. But when you look at it from the broader scope of the content that's out there and the access, it's not getting, it, it's, it's slow and it doesn't have to be. And I am excited about this sort of new awakening in America and all over the world, quite frankly, of the limitations that have been out there. And the handful of people who have been able to make a mark, it requires a lot. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of taking a lot of blows and just pushing through and hoping that you get those opportunities. And so I'm hoping that the fight won't be as hard now and we'll get to see even more growth.
Yeah, you know, something I talk about a lot is I try to keep the word hate out of my mouth. But one thing I hate is self-limiting beliefs. And now you're talking about people dealing with their own self-limiting beliefs and people putting limitations on them. It truly is incredible what you've accomplished considering some of these adversities that you've been faced. How do you find your way to overcome? And obviously you're wildly talented. You have this, like I said, it's just a sunshine like radiates off you when you walk through a door. But what is your process? Because obviously in that world, you're dealing with a lot, way more no's than yeses, I assume. And you're certainly, like you said, there's some limitations being put on top of anything we have going on in our own mental dialogue. What's your process to overcome and achieve as much as you have?
It's so funny because I honestly have to attribute everything to my faith. And I cannot thank my mom enough for instilling that in me at a young age, because understanding that we are all here for a purpose and a plan that only you can carry out, because God has gifted you with these specific dreams, passions, gifts, and it sort of automatically makes you feel like you are unique. And so there's this power that sort of this wind, in, you know, behind you, like that wind beneath your wings that you have inherently, that you can tap into it mentally, spiritually. And I experienced that at a very young age. And so when adversity would come, or when, you know, my color would come into, you know, play, I never allowed it to deter me, because I knew I had something far greater in me and behind me that would push me beyond whatever limitations someone else was trying to put on me. And so when you have that, you can't help but have a peace and a joy. And I'm not saying it was easy. I'm not saying that it wasn't hard. I'm not saying that I didn't cry. I'm not saying that I didn't doubt at times, but that's the piece. He is the piece that spurs me on, because I know that he has a plan and nothing and no one can keep me from that, whatever it looks like. And there have been moments in my life where I felt that it didn't work out for me, you know, because of my skin color, and I would be very disappointed. But then I tell you, JM, like right around the corner, something greater. And it was in those moments I'm like, you know what? It all works. Like, people may think that they have control. People may think they may have control over you, but God kind of has control and has the final say. And because of my relationship with him, and because I've sort of submitted my life in that way, I'm able to see those doors. I'm able to walk through those doors with confidence. So I never lead with a chip on my shoulder. I never lead with my color, because I don't have to. And if my color or my gender is a problem for someone, then I just leave that up to him, to her, him, to deal with God. Because I literally, and I know that sounds crazy, but I don't. Like, you know, if I have to address some things, I do. But I get that people have their own issues. I mean, we all have things that we have to overcome. And sometimes we have things that we don't even know that that's what it is. You know, because of how we grew up, because of our own limitations that we put on ourselves, like you say, because of our limited scope and experience, you know. And so I understand that, and I just don't let those things define me.
Well, it is amazing, and again, I talk about responsible versus victim. And one of the things that you just talked about is, regardless of what somebody has done, tried to judge or whatever, you never took that and said, I'm a victim of X. You'd literally take full responsibility of all your actions. You have this faith in God, and it just, it shines through. It is truly, truly unique. And I love it. So let me ask you this, and you may have answered this, but who has been the most influential, inspirational person to you in your time?
That's so hard, because there's, you know, I think every season of your life, there's someone that's super inspirational. So I can't think of any one person outside of my mom. Because you have to think, this woman was a widow at 28. She saw fit to see, you know, my gifts and my dreams, and worked two jobs, started a business in between that, made sure that everything that I ever wanted to do, she made a way for me. It makes me want to cry when I think about it. Her sacrifice, her tenacity, her stick-to-itness, like she against all odds was like, I don't care what anybody says, you can do anything. I don't, you know, no matter what anyone, what other limitations people try to put on you, with God, you can do anything. It's my job to just pave the way as much as I can, to prepare you as best I can, but he's got it, you know? And so if it weren't for her, JM, like, I just don't know where I would be. And so I would say she's the most influential. I think overall, then my husband, my husband, with his support, with his love, with his wisdom, with his guidance. I mean, and I didn't even get to mention that, you know, we met when we were 16 years old. We've been together ever since. We've dreamt together. We've failed together. You know, we've, you know, it's been an amazing journey. And without his support and his love and his covering, I would not be able to do anything that I do. So they would have to be the most influential people, obviously, along with my dad, who's my stepdad, who came along when I was about 10 or 11, who loved me, who supported me right alongside my mom. You wouldn't even know he wasn't my dad, you know? So I've just been surrounded by an amazing support system that has kept me truly grounded and been the wind beneath my wings, for sure. And then if we're talking about career-wise, one of the most influential people would be a woman by the name of Robin Lattiker Johnson, who, when I was making the transition back into being an executive, I left VH1. I had gone to be producing various shows for various networks. And then I was looking to come back to the network side. I was producing a show for NBC. And here this African-American woman was working at Sci-Fi Network, under the NBC Universal banner. And obviously it was just NBC banner, I think, at that time. And I had never seen an African-American executive at that level in my entire life during that time, which is, I know, sounds crazy, but it really shouldn't, because there aren't very many even now, if you can imagine. And she was at the Sci-Fi Network. I'm like, okay, who is this lady? Who is this woman? I need to know her. I walked into her office. I introduced myself to her. I told her I wanted to know her story. I gave her my resume. I'm like, listen, if anything opens up, I just want to work with you. I don't know what it was. I was drawn to her. I was drawn to her story. I was drawn to her. You know, she was just automatically became this inspiration, because it was like, she was a purple unicorn to me. Like, I just never seen it. I had never seen anyone in that position, being an African-American woman. And when I tell you, she called me out of the blue maybe 6 months later. I never worked with her. She was like, I have an opportunity to go to a different network. I can't think of anybody else. You have, you know, you've worked at a network before, and you've been a producer in the field. And I just love your spirit. And you're somebody that I think I want to work with. whichever network I decide to move on to, I'd love for you to be my number two. And I'm like, what? You know, I was like, what? And she truly believed in me. And I kid you not. So after that, she called me up and she said, okay, I've moved on. I'm going to be vice president of programming development at BET. And I want you to come on and be my director of development. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we were the first real development team, 2005, for BET. And we went on and we developed programming for African-American viewers who had not seen real docu-follow shows before for the community. We won awards. We told stories that people never were able to tell, you know, because other networks were just not giving us a voice. And BET at that time was primarily just videos and music shows and live event shows. And we came in and we sort of really, you know, started it for all intents and purposes. And we're really, really proud of that. And that was the beginning of a great friendship, mentorship. And I can't thank her enough because she truly, it was just a beautiful testament of, you know, someone reaching out, supporting, lifting up, and pouring in and believing in me. And she followed through. And ironically enough, now, obviously I'm not at OWN anymore, but now she is head of programming and development at OWN.
Wow. It is truly a small world, I guess, that way for that to go that way. You know, you said you literally reached out to this gal, Robin, and you took that first leap. Now, she obviously is obviously an incredible person to reach back out 6 months later and for that to where that led to for both of you. And I'm sure she feels the same about you. But I have to it's so cool that you said, I have to meet this person. I'm throwing myself out there because that's uncomfortable for a lot of people. I love that story. So we talk about fear to freedom on this podcast. And it to me, it's like I'm looking at your resume. This woman doesn't fear anything. She has freedom. But I know we all have something there. We all have something that we fear and we overcome. Do you have anything that has really stopped you in your tracks, but you found the way to overcome it? And how could people follow in your guidance on that?
Absolutely. It took a lot for me to take the leap to start my own business. I came from a long line of entrepreneurial women. My grandmother was a business owner. My mom is a business owner. So I grew up with that fire in me. However, the way that my career started off, you know, it was, you know, working for other people, you know, pushing everyone else's dreams, you know, which was fine. Like I loved it. Like I love using my gifts to help others because that was a dream of mine, right? To serve others with my gifts. And that's really, you know, what I'm doing now. But, you know, it was under the confines of someone else's vision. And as I, you know, as time progressed, I was like, wow, I have so much more inside of me. All these ideas, all of these things, I just really want to step out and just do them. But, you know, it's hard when you have a 401k and you have a great title behind you and all the, you know, great support of a corporation behind you. And to step out on your own and bet on yourself was like, oh, you know, and if I could say someone else that's been very inspirational would be Oprah Winfrey, quite frankly. You know, she would always talk about, you know, betting on yourself. I mean, that's something she talks about all the time and how you have to believe in what God has put inside of you and push past those fears and just step out and do. And so I was like, I just got to do it. And so when it was time for me to re-up my contract at OWN, I just knew it was time for me to move on. And everyone thought I was crazy, which it was crazy to do. But I just felt at this particular time in my life, which was what, 2 or 3 years ago, I had built such a great network of friends and resources that I just was not really utilizing and couldn't really, you know, being under the umbrella of a bigger corporation and network. And I just was like, it's time for me to step out. I wanted to do more speaking. I wanted to do more writing. I just felt limited. So when I didn't renew the contract and I started my own consulting firm, it was terrifying. It was because now it's just me. It's just me making the call. It's just me. Like, it's not India Kenny Stearns of. It's India Kenny Stearns. Remember, you know me. You know what I mean? And you remember, here's what I can do. And it was very liberating. It was scary, but it was liberating. And you know, now what, 2-3 years later, you know, I've got amazing clients, big client studios, production companies, developing projects that I'm excited about that I, you know, that I created or co-created or helped develop under my own shingle and banner. And I still get scared, JM, sometimes when I'm putting my content out there, because you have to think, being the person, going from the person that says yes to the person that has to be comfortable with receiving a no is hard. And
no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. And so every time I submit projects for people to tear apart, because I was that person who was doing the tearing apart for 20 years, you know, and dissecting and all of that, like, I know what goes into it. So it was a little harder for me in the beginning because I would be such a perfectionist and try to think of everything that that buyer would say why they didn't like it. So I had this extra layer of pressure because I knew too much. I knew too much. And I had to learn to pull back, to bring back just the faith in myself, the confidence in what I was doing, and be okay with whatever comes back. And that was a process for me.
Well, I'd love to hear it. And it's funny to say that because you said, like, I still get scared. I want people to hear that because, guys, it doesn't matter what you've accomplished. At some point, you're going to continue to put yourself out there. And that's what I want to get to next with you. Because, again, EKS, mm-hmm. CEO and founder of that. CEO of All Things Media. And you know what? Let's just go ahead and tack on a book that we're going to launch in 2020. Why Me? So can we talk about that? That you just decided, you know, I don't have enough on my plate. I'm just going to throw one more project on.
Well, yeah, no, you know, I had to write this book because what we didn't talk about was this sort of pivotal moment in my career. Around 2010, I, like I said, my career was taking off. It was amazing. Things were going great. And the stock market, you know, crashed in 2008. It was like a crazy economic downturn. We all remember that, right? And it didn't really hit the entertainment industry until 2010. And during this time, I'd sort of gotten a little big for my britches, but you would never know. I didn't know that. I never really led with that, but I could feel in my spirit something had changed. Where everything that I was doing was really about other people and serving other people. Now with the success, I started to put this extra pressure on myself of, I've got to maintain it. I've got to keep it up. I've got to make it happen. You know, so what turned out to be these gifts of service turned out to be more of a burden to keep up to. And my validation was no longer in, you know, people being inspired and encouraged. My validation came from my title, my money, where I lived, articles being written about me, the hits that I would get on television, like that became my validation. So imagine not getting a hit or imagine, you know, oh my God, they didn't ask me to do this. Maybe, you know, I need to, you know, adjust and do that. Like it became this thing that from the outside looking in, that's just a normal thing people do, but that's not what got me there. That's not what kept me grounded with my peace and my joy. And it was just, I was being robbed of it, but you couldn't tell me anything because I was so blinded by trying to keep up with what I had acquired and forgetting that, no, God sort of, that came by a byproduct of my obedience to the overall call to help other people. And when I was called into the office to be told that I was being laid off, I was shocked because I'm like, you don't lay off the superstar. And it was crazy because I had three other job offers from three other networks at the time as well. So I was like, it's fine. I'm going to be good. Cut to 9 months later, I go through this process of no return calls, network presidents being let go, whole networks shutting down. Style Network was one that had offered me a job and they were like wiped off the face of the earth. It was such a crazy time. People were out of work. Nobody could find jobs. And I was just spending money like I had a job. When all of those jobs fell through, I was looking at God like, what are you doing? Like, this is crazy. Like, why me? Like, this is so messed up. Like, I'm not like anybody else. Like, I'm integrous. I support people. I'm kind. I'm not like any of those other executives. I'm really for the people. Like, I was going at it. Like, I had an attitude and I was looking at all these other people who were sharks, who were liars, who were mean, who were just, you name it, that's who they were. And they were just prospering in the middle of this craziness. And I just didn't understand. And through that whole journey, JM, you know, adversity, God used adversity to teach me so much. And it was asking me three questions. One, who are you? What defines you? What drives you? And then locate yourself. Where are you spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally? Where are you? And all of those questions to the answers in the beginning of my journey of having everything stripped away really came back to me. Who am I? Well, nobody, now that I don't have a title, like, you need to fix this. I don't have a job. Like, you need to fix this. What drives you? Well, what used to drive me was being a service to other people, giving glory to the creator who gave me these, you know, gifts to Christ, who gave me these gifts. And that was out the window. Like, at that moment, it was more like, well, what's driving me is wanting to get my stuff back. You know what I mean? Like, I want to get that back. Like, what do we need to do? And then locate yourself. Well, locate myself. I'm depressed. I'm upset. This is not fair. I have no joy. I have no peace. I'm spiritually bankrupt. I feel nothing. Like, this is crazy. And all of this angst and anxiety and worry was really enveloped in this bubble of me. And expecting other people to validate who I am. And it was a horrible place to be. And then by the time the 9 months was over of me going back and forth with adversity, I came to myself and saw where I had changed my goals, where the answers to those questions were way off, and I needed to renew my mind and recalibrate my heart. And we had to move out of our house and move into a smaller place, a townhome. We went from two cars to one. I had to take one of my kids out of private school and we kept them home. It was, you know, and listen, I know this is first world problems. So I want to be very clear because there are a lot of people who are like, oh, boo hoo you. I get it. I'm not about to say that, you know, I was completely destitute because I wasn't, but in perspective of where I went to where I ended up was drastically different. Drastically different. We were in a 3-bedroom, I guess you could say duplex, and from a 6-bedroom, 5-6-bedroom home down the street from celebrities, went in a gate behind a gate. So it was definitely a feeling of I lost everything almost and I'm having to start over. Same with my husband. You know, he was doing music for television and film. And the first thing that left was the line item for, you know, composers. And so his business drastically changed from composing to library music now. And so now he's having to shift and do. So it hit everybody. And at the end of that, JM, I was so grateful. Because I was like, I don't care where I live, what I drive, as long as I am doing the will of God that He's put in my heart and in my life to do, and as long as I have a car to get me from A to B to do it, and I am working all of my gifts and my talents to the best of my ability to serve others and give glory to him for it, that is where my true joy and peace lie. And nothing is worth that. Ever again, nothing is worth that. And so it was in that townhome that I got closer to my family that I never, you know, in ways that I never thought I would. I was so worried that it would affect the kids. The kids were happier. They ended up going from two separate bedrooms to sharing a room and loving it. We were closer together. It was just an amazing time. And I would have never left that townhome had we not. It was like a huge gas leak in our area and they uprooted us. We had to move. But I have to say, I was okay and I was content. And quite frankly, it sort of renewed that sense of service in me and that boldness again of like, listen, if you don't want to work with me because of the fact that you think that I haven't arrived because I'm not, you know, rolling up in a Bentley or a Tesla, then we don't need to work together. And if, you know, all of these other things have to be a prerequisite for us to do business together, then you're not the one. And God is going to bring me someone else to make it happen. And when I tell you, it just changed my whole perspective of everything. And I'm grateful for it. So that then spurred on the book, Why Me? Because I would go around, I've been around numerous places, various conferences, and everyone kept saying, oh my God, you know, you got to put it in a book. You got to put this in the book. And so that's what Why Me is, how to stay in the fight.
I cannot wait to read it. I tell you, you said so much in that I just think people can get a ton from. It's interesting when we look back and it's those hard times that you said, 08, 9, and 10, where, you know, 10 really rocked your world and down in Hollywood in that area. But it was, you know, those were some of the best times you could go through. And it didn't seem that way at the time. And you had this moment of self-reflection. You asked these big three questions. And I just, to hear you talk about it, you could almost feel the weight just coming off of your shoulders and unburdening you and really letting you fly, which it's just so unique. Cause when you try and tell somebody that they're going through, hey, guess what? This is a good thing. You're going through this really tough time. Nobody's going to believe that.
No,
but the truth is we all have gone through that. And I love that you shared that. So I have to ask, just because again, you've gone through this journey, you hit this high note and then got humbled and then it's gone back. What does freedom mean to you?
Ooh, that's a good question. Freedom to me is not being beholden to anyone else's standards other than God's. Like, what defines me is the fact that I'm created and I am fearfully and wonderfully made. No one else is like me. I have a purpose and a plan that no one else can fulfill. So I don't have to worry about what, you know, what other people say or what other people think. I don't have to compare myself. I don't have to run anyone else's race. I have a race to run that only I am equipped to run along with, you know, the power that God has blessed me with. You know what I mean? And I'm free. Like, I was bound when I was worried about, oh my God, what are they going to say? What are they going to think? What do they believe? And let me be clear. Like I said, that is definitely something that I have to put in front of me every day. Like, okay, I'm getting that little feeling. I need to just, I know what that is. I'm not going back there anymore. You know, that's the difference. I don't submit to it. But I fight that. And that's freedom. That's freedom to me.
I love it. It's true. It just came from your heart. You know, I didn't prep you with that question, but it's something that I wanted to hear. And I think you answered it beautifully. So let me ask you this. What should I have asked you that I didn't know enough to ask? I've spent some time with you throughout the years and when you got together and, you know, doing the various things with my wife and Holly and some of the other gals. But I know there's something I didn't ask you that you're like, man, he should have asked me this. What is it?
Oh my gosh. No, you did great. I think I talked about every facet of my life I think you did fantastic. I can't think of anything. But what I would say to anyone that's listening right now, just to encourage them, is this. If you didn't hear anything today, that you take away the fact that no matter where you are, no matter what adversity, you know, you find comes your way, you have to remember that without adversity, it is impossible to know what true resilience is, what your inner fight really looks like. And sometimes you discover other gifts. You discover all, like, a whole new way of being that you didn't even know, a whole new power and authority in you that you didn't even know you had. And so that's why, you know, in this world of like, oh, it's all about being happy and prosperity and validating yourself by all of these things that could be taken away in the blink of an eye, really try to find the time to reevaluate your priorities and what you allow to define you, because having adversity is not a bad thing. It's a necessary thing. You will not become all that you can become without it. So the best thing you can do is embrace it, be present in it, and learn. Don't just go through it, but grow through it. Because it comes to ask you, who are you? What's going on with you? And sometimes adversity comes and you didn't ask for it. You didn't cause it, but it doesn't matter whether you caused it or not. It is a beautiful gift if you receive it and you respond to it well.
Well, I'm definitely going to continue to use that one. Don't just go through it, grow through it. I absolutely love that. India, I cannot wait for the book to come out. It is going to be an amazing read for sure. How can our listeners connect with you online?
You know what? I am available on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Miss India, MSENDYIA. I'm also on Facebook, India Kenny Stearns, and Twitter, India K Stearns.
I thank you so very much for always making me smile every time I get a chance to be around you, being here today and sharing your story and inspiring others. Thank you so very much from the bottom of my heart.
No, thank you for having me. It's so much fun to talk to you, JM, and I'm so proud of you. I'm excited about your book, Let's Go Win. It's such a great read. You're so inspirational. Such a great dad, husband. Like, I'm really honored to be a part of your podcast today. So thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you guys. I appreciate all of you all for listening. Cannot wait to see you guys next week. Have an amazing week. Transcending life. Thank you so much for listening. If this content is delivering value to you, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us. That helps us build this community, and that is what we are all about. Building this community as big as we can, helping as many people as we can, and deliver as much value as possible. Be sure to head over to transcendentlifepodcast.com for information on my coaching courses, and make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Let's Go Win 365. Let's go win and transcend in life.
This is the Transcend in Life podcast with your host, JM Ryerson, taking you from fear to freedom.